5266. This is the last day to do it. If you've been putting it off for any particular reason, now's the time. It is the time. Now is the place. Here is the place. Now is the time. 877-500-5266.
That's right. For news and public.
You are the person. It's for you. It's for me. It's about community. 877-500-5266. It's about information, which we are so need right now and are so not getting anywhere else. 877-500-5266.
All right. Thank you, Lynn and Ani. I just want to jump in and thank our kind and generous listeners and remind them that they're listening to KBOO Portland. And we've got some great programming still to come this morning. We're about a half hour away from the film show today, looking at two new documentaries. Charlie versus Goliath is the story of Charlie Hardy's fight against big money in politics. And then the director of the Eco Film Festival, Don Smallman, will talk about Winona LaDuke's new film, First Daughter and the Black Snake. That is coming up at 11:30 today, but up next it is Between the Covers. And Jake Vermas will be speaking to poet Neil Aitken, and that is coming right up. It is the fall membership drive here on The Boo. Call 877-500-KBOO or go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO would like to give a special thanks to our local community partner who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Musubi, located at 2134 Southeast Division Street, Portland's takeout spot for Hawaiian sushi rice snacks filled with homemade spam and other delicacies. Dinner was provided by B-Saw, located at 1545 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland, serving American comfort food and weekend brunch. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2017 Portland Eco Film Festival, September 28th through October 1st at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Portland Eco Film Festival is the Pacific Northwest premier venue for environmental cinema, showcasing films about nature, outdoor pursuits, wildlife, and eco-conscious living, along with visiting filmmakers, special guests, and conservation organizations, and more. Again, that's the 2017 Portland Eco Film Festival, September 28th through October 1st at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, you're listening to Between the Covers on kboo.fm or 90.7, and I'm your host, Jake Vermas. Today we're speaking with poet and author Neil Aitken about his new book, Babbage's Dream, out this year from Sundress Publications. Neil is also the author of The Lost Country of Sight and the chapbook Leviathan, which was recently awarded a 2017 Elgin Award in the poetry chapbook category. A former computer games programmer and a proud Kuniman Poetry Fellow, he holds an MFA in creative writing and a PhD in creative writing from UC Riverside and University of Southern California, respectively. He is widely published, and he is the founding editor of Boxcar Poetry Review, curator of Have Book Will Travel, and co-director of the Decanon of Visibility Project. Welcome to Between the Covers, Neil.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
And so, yeah, I wanted to congratulate you on winning the Elgin Award recently. That's great news.
Yeah, it was kind of unexpected. On some level, I don't always think of Leviathan as being a specifically sci-fi centered chapbook, because it's actually rooted very much in the history, in the history of computers. But there are nods and references to things that are more speculative and more, I guess, border on sci-fi. So,
yeah, and a lot of the themes, actually, a lot of the poems are also from Leviathan, were also made their way into Babbage's Dream, correct?
That is definitely correct. Yeah, so I look at Leviathan as being sort of the first run of like assembling what a collection might be around the life of Charles Babbage, this 19th century mathematician who who designs and partially builds but never completes what would have been the first. And in this process, this quest to build something that no one else could imagine, I started to think about what else would that impact. And so Babbage's dream kind of expands from that particular project, which was in Leviathan, to look at the ways in which we relate to technology in the modern world, both in terms of the field of computer programming and technology and sort of the spaces of work around the construction of software and hardware, and also as it relates to how we imagine intelligent machines, robots and computers that are artificially intelligent, and how the anxieties and the hopes that we have in relation to these.
That's pretty relatable. So he foresaw all of this in the 1800s.
To some degree, yeah, I would say yes. What he imagined was like, what would it take to build a machine that would take over the work, the intellectual labor of calculation? And from there, he had this epiphany that you could build a general purpose logic and reasoning machine that could run different types of programs and then be adapted to do different types of work. And the only limitation would be the skill at which the person programming it or giving the instructions could formulate that type of program that it would run.
Why don't we just jump into a few of the poems about his life?
Okay, so I'm going to read a few poems here that explore different aspects of the life of Babbage. We've been talking about Babbage as this great inventor and mathematician, and ultimately something of a disgruntled, failed genius who never achieves his goal. But I wanted to, in the book, I wanted to rewind and go back and look at some of his roots, some of the other ways in which he can be much more human than sort of this caricature that we have. So this is called Babbage in Love, 1811. For you, the world has always been knowable, an endless stream of equations expanding or contracting around an idea, a description of natural forces, or the familiar pattern unfolding in the leaves, and the numbered grace of branches weaving their canopies over country lanes, catching whatever stars, whatever moon looms over the dark and predictable ways of men like you, who bend at library desks night after night, except for this one, where you have come by chance to a ball at the home of someone you barely know, and here glimpse a face, or rather a brilliance in an eye that belongs to a stranger, an unknown variable who now finds her way into the awkward calculus of your heart. The room suddenly full of celestial motion, the tables brimming with error, and your hand in hers seems at last so improbable, an unsolvable mystery. Nothing has prepared you for this moment. Not a childhood spent summoning the devil into salted circles to ask unanswerable questions. Not the hours of rowing a skiff across an empty lake at dawn. The arc of the waves echoing the early light. So many fields of labor pointless here. You, as unsteady, as uncertain as you were in youth, a teenage boy with boards strapped to your feet, trying to walk on water, trying not to drown.
I'm just curious, before you go into the next one, were some of those anecdotes actually taken from known accounts of his life? Like, did he actually play with the occult?
So there is a fascination with the occult during this time period. And I think that, you know, I think a lot of it goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier about this existential anxiety, mm-hmm. about what is happening to the state of the human being and its relationship, the human being in relation to the natural world and to the world above, is, you know, somewhat in transition. Not somewhat, it is in transition as people understand more and more about physical and natural law, and as people kind of explore what a rational understanding of the universe might mean, and if there was a cost, if this meant that, could we apply the laws of reason to the supernatural and the occult is one avenue to take. And the other avenue to take was, or is there no room then for the supernatural once we found a way to explain everything within the realms of mathematics and physical law?
Seems like he went about it in a very clinical way though, right? To just sort of mark down everything and try to categorize as the responses and...
Yeah, I mean, it was a very experimental model is what he ran. And, you know, throughout his life, he basically takes this idea of field research and of experimental model very, very seriously. This is how he tackles everything. But then he's always looking for, is there a way to extrapolate from my research some larger point, some grander vision can be pulled from this? Is there a way in which these things might fit together in an unexpected way? And so for him, number was important, but it was also significant. He felt that particular numbers, like if you counted certain things, that there was a significance to why it was a certain way. You know, so for him, it was important then to catalog, to account, and to make sense of things through number and pattern. So in 1828, Babbage did what many people did when they were on the verge of a nervous breakdown. He traveled to Europe.
Grand tour.
get out of the country and kind of regroup. And so he goes to Italy. And when he's in his hotel in Italy, he looks out the window and he sees Mount Vesuvius, the famous volcano, which at this particular period had been dormant for a number of years. And he was really interested in natural phenomena. So this is his story, at least in his memoir, is that being fascinated by natural phenomena, he persuaded people to carry him to the edge of Mount Vesuvius. He persuaded people to carry him to the edge of Mount Vesuvius's crater and then have himself lowered down into the dormant part of the volcano. And once he was down on the dormant part of the crater, he then conducted a survey. And so this basically is a poem about that experience of him going to the volcano. And why I think quite likely that there is something else going on far beyond just simply a curiosity about the natural world, given the timing of this. Babbage, descending into Mount Vesuvius, 1828. All day your company has carried you on the backs of horses and men, humoring your strange obsession with flame and ash. Now, long before dawn, you stand heavy at the crater's edge, rope in hand, walking stick and measuring gear at your side. Below you, a plain of fire and darkness spidering out like the blood vessels of an eye revealed by artificial light. No one is eager to follow you down. The raw earth exhales sigh after poisonous sigh. Your feet are lost in the gray remains of unmade stone. As you ride deeper into the cindery maw, as you descend into the troubled skin of what might be hell. Here the world is always being destroyed beneath your feet. Your walking stick turns into a pillar of flame, a poor guide home. Everywhere the hot breath of death and decline, everywhere between the time bursts of molten light and heat, the song that tears through all the layers of earth, through so many moving parts. How it beats like sorrow in a locked room, like the name of a love buried beneath a mountain of iron and clay. It's a dark place here within your heart, at the end of a world emptying itself of meaning, translating loss into fire and ash. What is grief to a man surveying a landscape that will never be here again? What is the void that burns the sky with a yellowish light? Here, in such radiant absence, you turn your eyes away. Imagine again her hand, her face, her skin. So one of the things that Babbage does actually in this moment is having surveyed the dormant part, he looks out and he sees the active part of the volcano.
Oh.
And he finds a rocky ledge overlooking it. And he times the micro eruptions. And then he lies down on the rocky ledge and peers into the heart of the volcano and pulls himself out before the next eruption. And, you know, I thought he describes all this, and I think, wow. He says it's out of curiosity, but when I think about it in terms of his own life and all that he's lost in the previous year, I see it as someone who's on the verge of taking his own
potentially
life.
Potentially a death wish. Huh?
Yeah. And he chooses to pull himself out. And I find this is a major transition for him.
He pulled himself out, or he asked his friends?
He pulled himself out.
Oh, wow. That's really impressive.
So he looks into the heart of the volcano, and then he pulls himself back out before. So like he's lying down overlooking the heart of the volcano.
Right. Yeah, I like how you describe the Earth as a machine almost, with all the moving parts. And then immediately after that, it beats like a heart, or beats like sorrow in a locked room. Could you talk a little bit about the way that Babbage saw kind of natural phenomenon like the volcano? Was that?
Okay, so this is one of the most fascinating things that comes out of Babbage's worldview. He writes in something called the Ninth Bridgewater Treatise, which was his rebuttal of someone else's
criticism
that a engineer or a mathematician would have nothing to add to the topic of theology and divinity. And he had took great umbrage to the statement, and so he set out to interject into an ongoing kind of theological philosophical series of texts. He wrote his own sort of contribution to the series, which he called the Ninth Bridgewater Treatise, a fragment.
Is that the same nomenclature as the critic used? Oh my God, that's amazing!
And so so what he sets out to demonstrate in this book that he writes, is his argument is that all natural phenomena, all life, everything we witness on the surface of the earth is the output of a program that is run on a divine machine that is crafted by a divine creator. And so he says that there is no such thing, how can I put this? He says that what we perceive as miracles are not evidence of a fickle God intervening and breaking with natural law, but rather evidence of a divine engineer creator who foresees everything that is going to happen and plans subroutines in advance so that something can happen, step out of the normal logical cycle of how things are supposed to happen, and then return back to the original program.
Oh my gosh, like a feedback loop or something?
A little bit feedback loop, a little bit of like sort of conditional programming for the earth. And that's his argument. His argument is that there's, that miracles are not bugs, but actually program code.
Oh, like preordained.
Subroutined, thought out subroutines by a master programmer is essentially what he's arguing.
Oh wow!
And so when you say like what's a volcano to Babbage? Babbage just sees it as more of the same. It's more of part of the natural programming by a divine creator.
Oh okay, wow.
So the third category of poems in here are poems that revolve or take inspiration from different non-human others, especially mechanical or created others. So the poem I'm going to read right now is inspired by the Mechanical Turk. So late 18th century, early 19th century, there was a man, an Austrian inventor, who created a fake automaton. And so he built something he called the Turk. And it was a chess playing automaton.
Oh, wow.
Except it wasn't. Buried on the inside of the cabinet, hidden behind mirrors in a sliding wall of gears, he had an accomplice who would operate through sort of a mechanical arm the movements of the Turk to manipulate and move the chess pieces. The sophistication of that mechanical arm and the dexterity with which it could move was actually far ahead of its time. That was the true wonder.
Oh, wow.
But for everyone else, it was the spectacle of seeing a machine, a robot, an automaton, dressed as a Turkish mystic who then would play a near-perfect game of chess.
So he's a good chess player, the accomplice.
Yes. So he would have an accomplice who was basically a chess master. And so would win about 95% to 97% of the matches.
Oh, wow.
The ending of the Turk ends up that he ends up being stashed in the Chinese Museum in Philadelphia after a series of really terrible things happen in which the last operator also dies. And there's like a whole series of things that happen where people become ill and die. And he's basically abandoned and donated to the Chinese Museum.
Cursed.
And then there's a terrible fire in Philadelphia, July 5th, 1854, and the museum burns down as the course of the fire. So this is the Mechanical Turk, encircled in flames, faces its end. This is not how I thought I'd meet my demise. Unmanned, forgotten, a wooden figure trapped in a smoke-filled room, cluttered with ephemeral traces of empires and their decline. Here, everything burns case by case, until at last the fire lays bare all I've buried in my partitioned chest. The gears and mirrors, the hidden lines that guided my hand across the board. Once I held court with the powerful and wise. I pushed pawns, toppled queens, gave emperors pause before my drive. Now, no one answers my cry when the bellows fail and my voice dies. The game is up. The match is set. All that's left is my emptied frame and the ghost of this machine. Those who paraded me in the past have already slipped into the dark. My father into distant earth. My last master into the sea. Tonight I fell, my metal heart stirring with unfamiliar dis-ease. Dispossessed of my will, I do not know what move comes next, what face I should show when I lay myself down at last, unmasked, undone, upon the checkered board.
And so are we all undone. That's a good place to end it. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
Where can we find a copy of Babbage's Dream?
Babbage's Dream is available through Sundress Publications online and also on Amazon and hopefully in most of your local bookstores.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And you were just listening to that wonderful conversation here on KBOO between volunteer Jake Ramos and Neil Aiken, also a KBOO volunteer and poet who has just come out with this wonderful book. We call it Babbage's Dream, and you can get a copy of that when you call.
Yeah, there's
and
a
contribute.
Third place to get a copy.
Indeed. When you call and contribute to KBOO this morning, and you are able to give a sustaining membership of $5 a month or just $60 all at once, however it's easiest for you to do it, know that your support is doing a lot for your community all month long and that you can be thanked with a copy of this book. We would love to send it to you. And Neil has signed a couple of copies here in the studio this morning. So please do give a call at 877-500-5266 to join KBOO or renew your membership to KBOO this morning.
You know, I've been reading things. I've seen Charles Babbage's Machine. I've read many things about it, but I've never heard of any poetry about it before. And I really would like the ability to read about this. I love that Neil Aiken did this. I love that he has donated some copies, some signed copies for us this morning for a donation of $60. That's five stinking dollars a month. 877-500-5266 is the number to call to get that, to get your book this morning and to contribute to KBOO. It is more essential than ever for us to remain on the air. 877-500-5266.
5266. And with your help, I know we can do it. We have always done it with your help. There's no reason for that not to continue. 877-500-5266. And another thing that will be happening is that when you call in today is that there's a drawing prize package you can share with your friends or keep it nice selfishly to yourself. Five free Visit prepaid punch cards from Game Night Lounge, a $50 gift certificate, a tasting experience for four people and more from the New Deal Distillery, four passes for movies and snacks from the Hollywood Theater, and a $25 gift certificate to Pacific Pie. When you call in at 877-500-5266 to be entered for a chance for that, or go to kboo.fm for rules and restrictions apply.
And you know, everyone that calls in this morning is really a winner because you get community radio in your ear. And you know that you are doing your part to keep us strong and together through words that inspire, through poetry, through literature, through theater, through performing arts, also through hard-hitting politics. I love the radio zines. I love this informational programming between 9 and noon because it goes all over the place, digging deep into investigative reporting, into opinion, into insightful news and commentary like you heard with Press Watch this morning, and then getting into poetry and looking at the history of Babbage and the verse that inspired with Neil Aitken. Please give us a call and support the diverse programs that you hear on KABU, this media diet that enriches your life. It is so important right now for you to do your part and to become a member to empower your community to pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. We are looking to raise $280. $280 in the next 5 minutes.
And we've got a match.
We do, and that makes that so much easier because you, right now, my friend, can get your dollars matched. You can make your money count twice thanks to a generous contribution from Squirrel Farm, our partner business, and that is a wonderful thing that they have done this morning to contribute $500 to match your money as you call 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU this morning or renew your membership to KABU. Maybe you've been giving in a monthly way. Maybe you find that it's true what we say, that you might not actually even remember how much you're giving because it makes it so easy in these little bite-sized pieces. Go ahead and bump that up a dollar. Maybe bump that up $2 and give a little bit more. Dig a little bit deeper because, in fact, independent radio is more important than I can ever imagine it. And I have always thought it was important, right? I have always thought KABU was important. In the times in which we are living,
we find
that it is so much even more important and imperative that we hang on to our independent organizations and that we hang on to each other, that we build strong communities of resilient resistance. And that is what you are a part of when you call 877-500-5266 or again online at kboo.fm. Get a copy of the book Babbage's Dream by Neil Aitken. With your $60 contribution, you do a lot to empower and sustain your community, and we would love to thank you with a copy
right
of that book.
And right now it's going
to
be double that. So call in 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. We know we have lots of folks online these days and we love it. That is great. The whole thing of Charles Babbage, and who was really an inventor and a thinker, and his life was an array of stunning images that Neil Aitken has been inspired to write poetry about. And I'm just chuffed at that because I have never heard of this before. It is a truly unique book and something that you will find, as we always do from Between the Covers here at KBOO, not every week on Between the Covers, you get a copy of the book and be a member of KABU simultaneously. It's a great gift. 877-500-5266 for a minimum donation of $60. This to $5 a month. Sustaining is good. We love sustaining members.
It's in the name, sustainability. It keeps us sustainable to have sustaining members. So feel free to do that. 877-500-5266 is the time to do it. Last day of the membership drive, this is the time
to
call.
That's right. It's the Festival of the Last Minutes, and
right.
You can get in under the wire for the Radio Zine this morning, supporting Between the Covers, this wonderful show that brings forth literary voices so that we can, again, keep each other informed and inspired in so many ways. Because we know it takes more than hard politics. It takes poetry. It takes literature. It takes art and inspiration to keep communities strong. Please, this is the time that we can hear from you and that you know that you are doing your part to keep KBOO strong. You can hear all these wonderful people in the background here. That is because this room is full of volunteers who are excited to be a part of KBOO. And we invite you to come in to 20 Southeast 8th. And join us. Become a member in person. Renew your membership in person. Get a tour of the station. See how your money is spent. And that's 20 Southeast 8th, just a half block south of Burnside on East 8th Avenue, on your way to virtually anywhere. Just drop on in, and we'd love to meet you, have a cup of coffee, and show you how your money is put to work in service to your entire community. Maybe it's easier right now. You pick up the phone and call 877-500-5266 and join us. Join KBOO right now.
KBOO's Fall Drive Daily Prize Drawing rules. Everyone who donates will be entered into the daily prize drawing. No purchase necessary to be entered. Making a purchase or contribution will not improve an individual's chance of winning. The prize drawing is subject to all applicable federal, state, and local laws and regulations, void where prohibited, or restricted by law or regulations. To enter, call 877-500-5266 between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. and provide your name, complete address with zip code, date of birth, and day evening phone numbers with area code. Only one entry per person per household will be accepted each day. Winner will be determined in a random drawing daily between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. Winner may be notified by telephone the following day. For a copy of official prize drawing rules and restrictions, and for the name of the winner, go to kboo.fm/fall-daily-prize. And thank you!
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering locally roasted